Clayton. Sean Clayton.
Hey, Mom, I'm done with my segment.
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the Professor John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Bob, Dave, and more. If you guys have questions for the Professor, you can text those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So this Yannick Ngakoue trade was really interesting because he's obviously a guy we spent a ton of time talking about the possibility that he could end up here should they go after him. He goes to Minnesota, plays six games, incredibly productive looking at the stats, and then they ship him off. Is that just Minnesota saying, well, we're not going to commit the money to a long-term extension, we're rebuilding, or what does this move tell you?
It starts to tell me, and I when we talked about this the other day, I wondered if there's going to be any ramifications with the pandemic and now a six-day COVID period before, if you make a trade, you get a new player, it takes you 6 days just to get him in the building, and I wonder if that's going to slow things down. And now I see that it's probably not going to be it's not going to be meaningful at all, because you've got 12, 13, maybe 14 teams that are, really pretty well out of it right now and not going to be able to make it. Now, again, I put a couple of those in a different category, like any team in the NFC East can win the East with 4, 5, or 6 wins. So you take, maybe about 10 teams, and they're basically saying, we're done. And so now with the cap coming down next year, they're starting to look at the books and saying, okay, what can we do to clear things out and make it a little bit better? And so, knowing that they weren't going to be able to afford to be able to repay and get the contract extension with Ngakoue, they just get some value and just try to rebuild through the draft. You notice that the New York Jets have already made 2 moves this week. They traded a starting nose, or they cut a starting nose tackle. Well, they traded a starting nose tackle in Steve McClendon, and they took a linebacker and traded him. So I think what you're going to see is the teams that are out of it will start to move as many players as they possibly can.
Pretty good move. See, I didn't realize Seattle and Arizona, so they got promoted to Sunday Night Football, and the Raiders and Bucks got demoted, is that right?
Well, what had happened was that it wasn't a matter that they were picking one game over the other, but the entire starting offensive line of the Raiders right now COVID protocol. Now, that's because Trenton Brown tested positive, and so the other 4 starters in the line and Jonathan Abrams, who, of course, were near him, they just basically isolated them. Now, so far, they've not had any positive tests, so it looks like the game's going to be on, but what they didn't want to do, because you're talking so much money involved on a Sunday night game, because what you're looking at is that you have the Sunday night audience that's going to be there for NBC. I mean, you got Amazon Prime, which pays $65 million per game for streaming rights, and so you just have too much money. So what you didn't want to have is the possibility, let's say on Friday morning, somebody else tests positive and you either have to move the game. So this was a money saving move, and going, it's like, okay, what's a good game? And they looked at Russell Wilson, because all of a sudden the Seahawks have become like NBC's favorite, because that's the 3rd game in 6 that they now are on Sunday Night Football.
John, with the trade of Ngakoue, are you sensing that there might be more trades before the November 3rd trading deadline than in past years?
Yeah, I think so. Well, not maybe I think it's going to probably stay at the same level, but there's a lot of trades. Now, we're under right now, because last year I think there was a total of 102 trades, and now we're looking at what today's was like the 63rd, 63rd trade. No, 63rd trade this year. So the numbers ultimately are going to be down, but I can see, there'll be, 10, maybe 12 more trades, which is lower than the last couple years where trades have escalated. And again, some of that has to be because, you can do it. But what I look at for Baltimore, here's the incredible thing of what they've been able to do. And look at the talent that they picked up. They picked up Calais Campbell, who was the defensive player in the year in the NFC, or of the week in the NFC last week. Then Marcus Peters, who now has been one of the most active interception leaders since going to Baltimore. He's been excellent, former UW star. And then you get Yannick Ngakoue, and they didn't give anything above a 3rd-round pick. No first, no second-round pick. They pick a 3rd-round pick, and they take another pick for maybe another year. And, they're getting 3 really good defensive players like that now is going to make them really in that run for the Super Bowl.
So are the Ravens going to sign Dez Bryant? Is he? What's the word on where he's at physically?
That's the what they're doing right now, because they're going through the physical look at how he came off the Achilles injury, going through COVID testing, all those different things. And it looks as though and here's the key right now. He, like so many new other players, are willing not just to sign for the roster, to sign for the practice squad, to buy time to get in shape, you know, get situated, learn the playbook, and all those different things. That's why, you know, you look at this, the silly Antonio Brown situation, and the only way that, you know, he should even be a consideration at this stage is if he's willing to sign for the practice squad, just like you saw four other players in the last couple of weeks. You know, Damon Harrison did it. You know, Demarius Randall did it. Now he's on the active roster. You know, Damon probably gets on the active roster this week. Then you saw that, you know, Michael Kendricks did it. And Ray Armstrong, special teams linebacker, I mean, he did it. And so now if you're Antonio Brown, you got to do it two ways if you want to be a Seahawk. One, you have to probably sign the practice squad, which is $12,000 per week. And you probably need to sign a minimum salary deal that has a low cap number.
All right, so everybody's up in arms about it, John, and what do you think? I mean, look, it's we've been talking about it. We got tired of Antonio Brown talking.
I'm totally tired of it.
Yeah, but I mean...
I'd rather talk uniforms. No, I wouldn't want to do that.
Are you sure?
Boy.
Oh, you opened that door, John.
Don't get Jim all fired up.
Do you think they'll wear the green ones this Sunday?
I just hope they wear one something, because, again, it would, if they go out there naked, it's not going to
work. Naked is no good.
Nobody wins.
No.
I mean, but I...
No, but can you imagine Snacks Harrison, even though he's svelte?
No.
No.
Don't want to imagine any of them, John.
No, that's a good point.
I had a comment, but I'm not going to pass on it and something about Snacks. Never mind.
Yeah, but okay. No, that's okay. But no, honestly, it's like, I think, you know, what you're looking at is that, you know, I think it's a bad move, because you got so many positive things going on right now. You kind of get the feeling it's negative on the Josh Gordon front because they're so silent. And I guess one of the reasons they stay silent in the league office is because, you know, to protect the player, which of course he's not protected if he's not allowed to go back on the field. But, you know, that's silliness. But there should be some clarification. But you kind of get the feeling that things aren't going in a very good direction there. But we don't know for sure. And so, but this team is still good with David Moore. This team is, you know, Freddie Swain's getting better and better and better. And then you still look at the fact that, you know, I think, I know Dave and I hope Bob does too, and Jim, that you like, you know, John Ursua, because right now John Ursua is on the practice squad with limited chance to move up. And so if you bring in Antonio Brown in and even put him on the practice squad and you're John Ursua, it's like, hey, I'm so far away from getting on the roster, I've got to go to another team.
Hey, John, what can you tell us about Hassan Reddick, a linebacker for the Cardinals? He's got four of their 17 sacks mm-hmm. this year.
Well, I mean, it looks like they're considering trading him because, you know, as Steve Keim is going to be kind of like John Snyder, he's always involved in a lot of trades, and he wants to get the thing better. You know, they certainly now are lacking sacks because of Chandler Jones being gone. But Hassan Reddick, when he was at Temple, I mean, he was a player that really, you know, you talk about like a Joe Burrow who just shot up the charts after his last year in school and then, you know, became the first pick in the draft. I mean, I remember talking to Hassan, and he was like a fourth or fifth round pick in the year before he turned pro. And then he took us all the way to first round. But unfortunately, he still doesn't fit in there in that 3-4 defense. I mean, he's getting a little bit more playing time with Chandler Jones out. But, you know, the way it looks is that would be not surprising if they move him.
Those Temple dudes are tough, John.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's something about who's the coach there? I'm trying to remember the guy's name. And then they got a defensive coordinator. Yeah, over the last few years. But anyway, yeah, they have kind of a reputation of being tough guys. Kind of like Stanford.
Yeah, very much like that. John, the 360 is asking, they say, John, I'm a lonely Dallas fan. Can they put this dumpster fire out and win the NFC? Thanks, Professor.
You say NFC?
NFC absolutely. East.
Yeah, oh,
East.
Absolutely. No question. Yeah, I think they have the best chance. They're not going to win the NFC with a 6-10 record. But, yeah, all they have to do is, you know, win four or five games in the division, and they'll win the division. And if they don't win four or five games, and let's say that everybody goes 3-3, then you're talking them being about a 5-win team. But I still think with their offense – maybe not their offensive line, but the way their offense is, they can still go ahead and, you know, win the games against the bad guys in that division. Because really, it's a two-division race right now, and it's one of the worst races we've ever seen in the standpoint that, you know, here's Philly 1-4-1. They've got four missed injured guys on the offensive line. You've got Dallas right now, similar boat, you know, four injured guys on the offensive line and starting tight end out. Eagles have two starting tight ends out. And then, you know, now you look at the but they still got the good three-receiver core. And I think Andy Dalton's still good for something. So I think that he might be able to work something out. So I still think, you know, in my eyes, they're the favorite because they can take advantage of the bad guys in the NFC least.
Hey, Stephen or Stephen Sullivan?
Stephon.
Stephon, thank you. He was the hard luck guy the Seahawks moved back into get a draft choice in the seventh round, I believe. And the Seahawks are thinking about working him out as a defensive end. He's playing a little bit there. What an underdog story that would be, because that's the guy that was living underneath, you know, embankments or on ramps and things like that. I mean, what an amazing story there.
Yeah, and again, you can probably see that Pete Carroll's taking him under his wings, because you remember at the draft how much he raved about getting him in the seventh round, calling him one of the favorite players he could ever get. And so I think they're just trying to find a role for him. And, of course, I mean, you know how it is. Sometimes, I mean, you can make some major changes. Like, for example, Jim Moore's favorite guy, Hercules Mutafala, over when Washington State, you know, he was a great college player, right?
Yes.
Then, unfortunately, he didn't get drafted. And then, you know, what ended up happening, I was still kind of stunned at this, you know, as a linebacker, they turned him into a nose tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, you bulk him up. And so I guess in the case like this, I mean, if you're a tight end, you're going to be in the 240, 245-pound range. And maybe if you can show that quickness, maybe you can do some things as a Leo.
But by the way, Mutafala and Jim will love this. I saw, and you know, Ben Lieber, who was a linebacker there with Minnesota, and he does some of their media stuff. And I saw an interview one time where he had Hercules on during camp, and he's like, "This is one of my favorite guys." And the guy who was running the show was like, "Yeah, all you do is rave about this guy." But yeah, Ben Lieber was talking up Hercules Mutafala, and I think he's been hurt. But I liked him at the combine.
Yeah, what they did is that they cut him and they put him on the practice squad.
Okay. Anyway, I think that guy has a ton of potential.
I do, too.
Tough guy.
I'm saying something good about you, Washington State.
Even though he went to Washington State in spite of that.
Boy, thing. Professor, you're coming around. But what about Gardner Minshew? He's going to the Chargers. They're facing the L.A. Chargers this week, John. Any chance whatsoever for Gardner Minshew and the Jaguars?
Yeah, there's a chance he could get benched, which is really scary. Because earlier this week,
it's not what Jim was looking for.
Well, I mean, just giving the honest appraisal right now, because they asked directly Doug Marrone about the benching of Gardner Minshew, and he wouldn't rule it out. Now, it's not going to happen, before the game, but it sounds to me like there could be a quick hook in there, and Mike Glennon, for God's sake, end up being the quarterback. So it's desperate situations now in Jacksonville, and I don't like this because, again, you know, I still thought that Gardner was not going to win many games, and that turned out to be true because of how bad the team is. But what I hate to see is this bad team pulling him down. That I don't like.
Well, and then we'd have to listen to Jim every week say, "Mike Glennon's in there. Gardner could have done that. Hey, John, when are they going to put Minshew back in?"
Or it's like until November 3rd in the election, he's going to be saying, "Should the Seahawks trade for Gardner Minshew?"
Yeah.
Wasn't Mike Glennon the guy that the NC State coach opted
yep.
for?
That's
over
correct.
Russell Wilson?
Over Russ.
He's also the guy that
long neck.
Yeah, and he led Tampa Bay to a big lead in the first half here in a game, if I recall, right?
Yeah,
John?
But of course he's bounced around and is pretty much not a very good quarterback.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, let's put it this way: was it 1 year or 2 years after they let Russell Wilson go that this head coach got fired? And then of course, he goes down to Tampa Bay, and he was so bad down there that led to some firings.
He's pretty much not a very good quarterback. The way you put that, John. I lost the text, but they were asking, you know, we talked about the Seahawks being flexed to Sunday Night Football against the Cardinals. They were asking, why wouldn't it have been the Titans and the Steelers since they're both undefeated?
Well, because that game probably is protected. Because remember, I mean, you know, if you're going to be CBS or you're going to be Fox, you don't want to lose too many good games. And, you know, they've already lost some in the standpoint with movement of games and stuff like that. Like, for example, Thursday Night Football lost that Kansas City-Buffalo game, you know, because, which, you know, didn't turn out to be a great game. But again, you're talking about two of the better teams in the AFC. And so, you know, they probably ended up, when they moved it around, protecting it just because, again, they realized you have the potential of undefeated teams. You know, they were supposed to play it in what, week five or week four? It was week four they're supposed to play it, so they move it back 3 weeks. And so, you know, you need ratings if you're going to be the networks, and you don't want to lose that. And my guess, it didn't want to move it. And so what was a simple thing to do to take a late afternoon game, you know, between Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson and move it back? And plus, I'd venture to say, because I haven't seen the ratings, that the Seahawk ratings, thanks to Russell Wilson, have to be pretty good because, you know, now this is the third time they're going to be on.
Hey, John, you guys probably have already talked about this, but Tua Tagovailoa is going to be the starter in Miami, and it looks like quite an effusive emotional release from Fitzpatrick. Sounds like his heart was broken. Was he crying?
I don't know if he wasn't crying, but I mean, you know, and he's done this. Now, again, you think about the 17 years he's been in the league, and I believe he's only been on one winning team. And so, you know, he's been up, he's been down. And again, in reality, he's just a very good backup, maybe one of the best backups in football. But, you know, here he was, and I thought that the way he had been talking about Tua was, you know, so positive because he was the mentor. He was the guy trying to promote Tua to learn as much as he can. And the plan apparently was to have Tua start in week 11, you know, because that's when their bye week was supposed to be. What ended up happening because of the movement of the schedule, the Miami's bye week was moved up to week 6. And so now here's Fitzgerald, you know, he's got, you know, 3 wins and 3 losses, doing pretty well there. And it's like, I got this team to a chance now where you got two NFC West teams he's facing, you know, because he's got the Rams and he's got Arizona. And he's thinking, okay, let's take care of them. And now he just had the rug pulled out of him by taking away that starting job.
Professor, you're not going to believe this. I actually found an offensive stat where the Seahawks are 31st in the league and only the New York Jets are worse. Can you name the stat, John?
Is it something involving third downs? Or
very professor, come on. That's why they call you the professor.
Oh, how about that?
Third down conversion rate, the Seahawks are at 32.6%, 31st in the league. Is it? They don't seem to get the third down that often, though,
no,
John.
That's one of the keys. I mean, like, for example, what is it? It's like it's just like poor Jason Myers. I mean, went to the Pro Bowl 2 years ago, and what's he had, like 2 field goal attempts?
Yep.
I mean, and, you know, and you can see league-wide, this is because of offenses doing so well. This is like a record year for the lowest number of punts. And, of course, you can see that, you know, this team has a punter that gets everything inside the 5 to 10 yard line, and he's, you know, probably having another Pro Bowl type season. But you feel sorry for that. But it's just such a weird year like that.
Hey, what do you make of this Michael Thomas situation with the Saints? They're saying he's listed with a new injury, although he didn't play last week, and a limited participant in Wednesday's practice, and then said he was not seen on the field during the open portion of their practice today. So what does that tell you about him?
Well, I know that Sean Payton on Wednesday said that he's been cleared now of all the bad tantrums and things that he's had, and so there's no more discipline or anything bad in that regard. But I think what ended up happening is that in Wednesday's practice, you know, trying to come back from that high ankle sprain, he tweaked his hamstring. And so with the hamstring injury, that's the reason he wasn't on the field today. So you kind of get the feeling he's kind of doubled down as far as the injuries, because he's got the problem with the high ankle sprain, now he's got the problem with the hamstring, and so it looks like there's a decent chance he's not going to be able to play.
John, what do you think about this? Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless each put $1 million in a pot and gave it to the Seahawks to say that they would look at Antonio Brown so then they could have something to talk about on the radio for 3 days.
Oh, that's great.
Somebody texted that in.
Yeah, my guess that isn't true, and I think I can verify it pretty easily because, you know, Joy Taylor, who hosts that show, went to my high school, and that's Jason Taylor's sister, and she used to, you know, produce a Thursday morning thing that I did on Miami radio, and I was the one who talked her into trying to go into, you know, even trying to co-host and host, and now she hosts on radio, she hosts on TV, and just a great, great person. And so I think that, you know, knowing that she came up in Turtle Creek, PA, that she's not going to allow either one to put $1 million in a pot.
Right. Nobody from that high school would allow such a move.
No, absolutely not. I know. Let's put it this way: Gronk wouldn't allow that to happen.
No, I mean, Jason, you guys were classmates, for the love of God.
Yeah, for heaven's sake. And I think Joy was like 1 year away from Gronk as far as the classes that she was in.
And you were 1 year away from those two, right?
A few more than one.
Okay,
there's a few.
We won't go into detail.
No, we won't.
John, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, do they bounce back at Houston this week?
Oh, absolutely. Houston's terrible. I mean, you know, think about the idea that they can't stop anybody running the football, and they're pretty bad in the secondary. And, you know, so I would have to think that if Aaron Rodgers doesn't come up with 350 yards, it's an upset. Because, again, that defense is so bad, and the Texans are so bad right now. So, you know, the only reason that maybe he doesn't get the 350 is that if he's got maybe a 25-point lead in the third quarter, maybe they just, you know, give him a little bit of a rest.
Hey, we were talking about, you know, facing this Cardinal team and Kyler Murray and playing some cuts from Cliff Kingsbury, talking about the similarities between him and Russell, and we obviously came to the conclusion he's faster than Russell, but he's not more accurate. We saw that last week, 9 of 24, even though they put it on the Cowboys, who are terrible. But when you look at him, are you fearful of his – I mean, he can complete passes. He's got a great arm.
Mm-hmm.
But the accuracy, I'm thinking if I'm the Seahawks, I'm doing everything I can to force him to throw and try to keep him contained. The legs scare me more than the arm. Where are you at with him?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think he's going to be a really good one because I think ultimately he'll be better than Lamar Jackson because he's a 4-3 guy in the 40-yard dash. You know, he can throw the ball very well. I think he's going through some growing pains right now. And I think that, you know, Kingsbury's still trying to – he's done a good job. Obviously, he's 4-2, but he's done a good job of kind of readjusting the offense. But one of the things that he does, and this is going to affect Quentin Dunbar, is that, you know, like in the air raid offense, they like to isolate one guy on one side and keep throwing him the ball. And so in many ways, you know, that means he's going to keep forcing it to DeAndre Hopkins, which may not be a good thing for Seattle with the last time he played Seattle over 200 yards. And so now it's a matter of trying to isolate that situation and make sure that, you know, Dunbar gets a little bit of help from somebody and contains Hopkins. But, you know, he can be so inaccurate. Like here was a play in the back of the end zone to Larry Fitzgerald, who was absolutely wide open, nobody near him, and Murray overthrew him. And then he's gone through these little phases where, like in the last, I mean, he only had like about 137, 147 yards passing because he couldn't get the ball downfield, and he can throw interceptions. So, you know, this is one where you want to win that turnover battle against him and then try to coast into some kind of a victory.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Come on up. We check in with Paul Moyer. We always love this. What is the biggest concern in facing this Cardinals team? We'll see what Paul's got to say next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Well, we always look forward to a conversation with this man, as much as I know all of you do, here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We bring in the one, the only, Paul Moyer, talk Seahawks football. Paul, how are you, man?
I am doing well. Happy Thursday. Thanks for having me.
As always.
I don't want to hear anything about your weight.
223, Dave.
Dang it.
Nice.
223.
Do you want to fill people in on what you're talking about?
Well, we were having a little bit of a contest. Moore was trying to get to his playing weight. And I took a negative turn, Paul, during the last week.
Well, and you should. You're down in Palm Springs area, you and your wife. I mean, you're going to backslide at times.
What was your playing weight, Paul?
I was my last year was around 210. So
you're getting to 210?
That's my goal.
Wow.
And it's getting tougher now because I'm, you know, it's a quarter pound a week type thing now. But I'm going to kick it up a notch a little bit here in my workouts and see if I can get there before Christmas.
All right. Is there a deadline? Do you guys have a date where you're
Paul has a walker. He takes around the block.
Spin bike. No. I'm trying to avoid the walker.
Oh, I got
not
you.
Bob, really, it's just – We want to live a long time. I want to have grandkids and be around and be healthy, and this was the start of it four or five months ago.
I got you. That makes perfect sense. All right, let me get the obligatory question out of the way, and then we can move on to other things. But obviously Antonio Brown has been a massive topic for obvious reasons. If you are the GM, Paul Moyer, Seahawks GM, has the power to sign him, not sign him, move on, leave things as they are, what would you do?
Yeah, we can't kick this can down the road anymore. It's here. So there's a feel and then there's a think. My feeling is, do we want to disrupt it? And, is he going to be a good clubhouse guy? That feeling is I don't feel like they're going to sign him, but I think they should. And the reason why I think they should sign him is it's different than Percy Harvin. It's different than in past situations where you bring a guy in and he's forced onto the team to make it work. Here you got Russell Wilson, who wants him, worked out with him, knows him. You can design the contract so it's a no-risk situation. He's in a prove-it mode. You don't get opportunities to have a team that's so dynamic to win Super Bowls, and particularly on the offensive side. I think you do it. I feel like they may not, but I think they will.
All right. Hey, Paul, let me ask you about Michael Kendricks. And, you and I have been kind of going back and forth a little bit with Cody Barton. I like a lot of the things that he does. He's very physical. Very physical at times, and then sometimes he looks a little clunky. But you got Kendricks, who I really liked last year, and to me he's a good football player. Probably if he's able to play the way he did last year, I think he's an upgrade from Cody for now. Anyway, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's all about his health, Dave. I mean, we saw at times when, he was healthy, he's a fantastic football player. He's also a guy who can come off the edge, so you just add one more component there for what we've been doing in the blitz package. My concern is he going to be healthy? Does he take a step back? Dave, you and I both watched the game against Minnesota. Cody actually played pretty well. I didn't realize it until I had to go back and watch the game tape, but he certainly wasn't, a negative on that side. But I think bringing Kendricks back, that's a good move. And, if it takes him a week or two to get in football shape, bring him on, a good football player.
What about Snacks Harrison? Is he encouraging? You think things will get better once he gets in the middle of that defense?
Well, I think they brought him here at this time for the right reason. We had all these passing teams, and now we're about to embark the next five games on – really teams that can run the football. I mean, we got Arizona twice, intricate, tough running game. We got 49ers. We all know about them. And then the Rams, and then throwing Buffalo too. That's five tough football games, good offensive lines, and we're going to have to be stout up the middle, and we're going to need to rotate our guys to keep them fresh. So I just don't know. I haven't seen them. We're not allowed out there anymore, right? So you're really just at the mercy of what Pete Carroll's saying in press conferences. But if you can get him somewhat healthy, he's a load. I mean, he is such a big man. He was a fantastic football player. He certainly can't hurt us, and hopefully he can play even just 80% of what he used to. That would be a big boost for the Seahawks.
So, Paul, when you look at this Cardinals team, what concerns you the most? We've talked a bit. I've said it's the legs of Kyler Murray, not so much the arm, but where are you at with this team?
Well, the running game, I think Kenyon Drake, he's hurt us before. He's got good speed. That guy is averaging about 4.79, whatever, or 4.9 yards a rush. Murray's not that accurate. I think if you can take away the deep throw, you're fine. He has some deficiencies in his throwing mechanics. Now, he's dangerous. I like him. I think he's going to be around for a long time, going to be a stud. But he's still in his second year, and he struggles at times. He struggled last week other than those two big throws. So, to me, let's just stop the running game. And I know I hate to say this, but let's force him to throw the football. If we can make him somewhat one-dimensional, I like our chances. But their defense, my worry, they're starting to play well. That secondary got after the Cowboys last week. We struggled with them. Grant, they had Andy Dalton, and their offensive line is banged up. The Cowboys are. But they look physical, and I think this is going to be fun. But the first five games, we didn't play a lot of great football teams. We're about to, and I think we're really going to find out what kind of team we have.
Yeah, Paul, you mentioned the defense. Man, they're number two scoring defense, Arizona. And, you look at what the Rams are doing as well. I mean, they used to be all offense, and now their defense is top five. I don't know how they fared through the weekend, but, man, all of a sudden the NFC West is looking brutal. Well, that's good.
Yeah, they lost. Dave was on vacation.
Yeah, I didn't watch a lick of NFL. Not
good
a lick.
For you. Yeah. A real break. The one thing that's interesting, most of our schedules are similar because we end up playing the same teams. We haven't played a lot of teams. I think the Rams have played the NFC East for the most part. We're going to get the majority of those coming up. We thought Minnesota was going to be good. We thought the Cowboys were going to be good. We thought, Atlanta, they've proven not to be. And so I don't know what anybody is yet. I think the first five games were kind of like a boxing match. Everybody's kind of felt each other out and what are you? And now the gloves are about to come off because the next five games are going to be physical football games. We're up against the NFC West and throwing Buffalo on top of that. That's a gauntlet that'll be fun to watch. And I think we're good. We're going to really find out.
Hey, Paul, earlier in the show we were talking about Kyler Murray and the similarities to Russell Wilson, at least early in the career, and how elusive they are and comparing stats, that type of thing. So Russell's 8 years or 9 years into his career now, and we know where he is. He's having an MVP season. 8 or 9 years from now, what do you think we're going to be saying about Kyler Murray?
Well, he still has some proving points. The one thing about Russell is his numbers have never wavered. He's always been a high completion guy. He's always had a great, TD to interception ratio. And the one thing that he has over everybody else is he's never had a losing record. I mean, he's a flat-out winner. Russell, to me, is just a more accurate thrower. I think Kyler is super talented. He's got that, wrist flip, the way he spins the ball that I really love. He's got a good feel for the game, but he's not at that level with Russell. I think time still, got to play out on that one. But I think he's going to be good, Jim. I really do. He's just not there yet. He's dangerous. I think he's going to be inconsistent still for a couple of years. But I heard you guys the head coach for Arizona talk about Russell
Kingsbury.
Wilson. Thank you. I was about to call him Shanahan. Kingsbury. How he talked about Russell, and he's dead on, and that he is just so in tune to this game right now. The game has slowed down for him. His decision-making is so good. By the time he hits his back foot, he's scanned the whole field and knows exactly where to go with the football. Kyler's not there yet. I think he will be, but he's not there, and I think he has a long way to go to be in Russell's category.
Paul, we always appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. We got Will Disley on tonight, 7 o'clock, Hawks Live.
Hey, oh, Hawks Live, there we go. Paul Moyer, Michael Bumpus,
and Will Disley.
There you go.
Tune in. All right, Paul, appreciate it, man.
You got it. Bye.
There you go. Always a good conversation.
You don't
want
to listen to that, though.
No?
You want to watch Q13 tonight.
Yeah, you guys, what time are you on?
I don't know, 8:30 maybe?
After the game?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, they could listen to that, and then once you hit the TV screen, they can flip
the
TV
screen. If Moyer's talking, it'll just be a bunch of nonsense. So you don't.
All right.
I'm kidding. I kid.
Coming up, Baker Mayfield is mad at the media again. Shannon Sharp lets Skip Bayless have it, and Keyshawn Johnson has some weird analogies for how Antonio Brown would fit here. All of that coming up when we sweep the dial next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
I don't give a damn what they say. It's within this building. We know we can be better. I know I can be better. And that's how it's going to be handled. The outside noise doesn't matter. They get paid to talk. We get paid to do our work. So that's how it's going to be handled.
That's the voice of Baker Mayfield. Doesn't want to hear from critics after he had the third worst quarterback performance of the season against the Steelers last week. Quarterback rating of 5.5. Playing through a chest injury. He was actually replaced in that game by Case Keenum in the third quarter. And then the head coach, Stefanski, basically just said, I didn't want to see him get hit one more time, which is why they took him out. Well, not because he stinks.
Yeah, he's been good, though, this year. Like, remember he said, I'm going to shut up? And then he did. And then he has this performance. And then he just sounded a little bit too edgy there.
I still love those commercials, man. I think those commercials are fantastic.
Oh, you're talking about when he's having people over to his house and it's the stadium?
The stadium, yeah, all of those.
The book club.
Yeah, the book club. He's great in those. He's so likable there. It's just everywhere else, not so much.
What's the book club one about?
Oh, man, that's a good one.
Yeah, they're at the stadium just, you know, looking at, they're talking about passages from a book they're reading.
Okay.
The steamy honeymoon scene.
Yeah.
I like when it starts to rain and he's like, help me get these seat covers on.
Yeah. I love those. But, yeah, him outside of those commercials is
just, no good.
Yeah, he's a little tough to wrap your arms around.
You don't, hey, Bob, you don't cut him any slack for the rib injury that he was playing through?
No.
You think it might be kind of hard to throw a ball with a rib injury?
I don't know. Russell played with a pec, a knee, and an ankle injury all at the all same right. time.
I'll tell you okay. what, those are the most annoying. I actually re-injured it the other day because I broke a rib.
Mm-hmm.
Rod Bernstein kicked me.
It was on your team,
heel.
Right?
Yeah, it was in practice. And then another time I pulled a muscle in my chest and like it was like bruised. Mm-hmm. The bruise starts to come out. It's just, it's painful.
Yeah.
But once you get warmed up, you're okay. It's just afterwards. So he shouldn't be complaining about it.
You should be fine, Jim. Yeah.
Plus, remember when he took that hit when he ran away from the police?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the hardest hit he's ever taken.
That was a big hit.
What did he do, Jim? You and I were looking
at that. He ran into a concrete wall, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm surprised he got caught.
Well, that's what I thought. I mean,
he was
I don't
running
care
from
what
someone.
40-yard dash you run at the combine. That I know he was inebriated, but still, the cop. He was no, as Jim would say, he was no great shakes. And he ran him down.
Pull this up for me, because I want you to see this. Now, D-Law has contained, Skip. Why is he inside? He has contained.
How do you know that?
I
think you can't know that. Seriously, I think you can't know that unless you interview those people and find out what the defense called.
Let me tell you what.
I know this because I've been doing it for a long time. And if I wrote that back in the day, somebody could come to me and say, you have no idea what defense got called there. Just for the record.
Skip Bayless, are you telling me my 14 years of playing this game.
I'm saying you never know. You never know. You don't know. You can't know. You can't know.
Skip, what is this?
You just can't know. You can't know.
Skip, you're upset. You want Mike Nolan gone. I know what they're doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me. You covered it. I was in the huddle.
Okay.
I was in the locker room.
Yeah.
I was in the meeting room.
You weren't in this.
They are wrong.
You were not in this huddle and you weren't in this.
I know that defense.
You just, Shannon, you were not.
I know that defense.
You do not know that defense. You have no idea what got called.
Oh, my goodness.
You don't know.
Hit him, Shannon. Hit him.
It was so funny is whenever you'd get in an argument with Shannon Sharp, he'd always say your name.
Wyman, blah, blah, blah.
Wyman,
hey, Wyman.
Blah, blah,
blah. What did he say, first and last?
No, just.
Well, now, what do you think of that? Because there's part of me that goes, I know athletes a lot of times are loath to throw out the, listen, man, I played the game and you didn't card, which is good. But in that instance, now, you always talk about not knowing the rules of a defense. So you don't want to comment, but at the same time, he sounded really certain, and in that case, I'm probably going, well, I'll defer to the guy that played for 14 years in the league that he's got an idea of what was supposed to happen with contain on that play. But what do you think?
They were talking about force or contain or you know, turning the play back in. Well, I'd have to see it, but you know, I think Skip has a point there that you don't know that sometimes there could be a switcheroo there or you know, it could be this guy's going inside, he's going outside. But you know, maybe – I think the fact that he's bringing that up is very refreshing. Because I feel like
Skip is?
Yeah. No. And, I mean, a lot of people will just go, oh, he screwed that up. And he's at least he's considering it. But I'd have to see the play in order to. Did I tell you guys I took a picture of him the other day on TV and sent it to him and said, did the light bulb in your closet burn out?
Of Shannon.
Sharp. Yeah. He had like a pink shirt on and then this, it looked like somebody shot a couch and made it into a suit. And so him and I used to be on the plane making fun of everybody, and we'd just, like, make comments back and forth. And now he's out wearing that crazy stuff. Carl Mecklenburg was the worst. He would have, like, the corduroy jacket with the elbow patch.
Elbow patch, yeah.
And then, like, mailman shoes. And, yeah, we would.
You have a big belt buckle, too.
One time Atwater came on with a purple suit. And we started singing the Barney song, I love you,
you love me.
Yeah. But, yeah, Sharp is pretty funny. That's a funny dude right there. But, yeah, I'd have to see it. Do they have it on that video? Maura, do you know? Are they? actually show the play, or are they just screaming at each other?
I would have to go back and look. I actually got this sound from DJ Wilder, the morning show,
well,
Danny and Gallant.
You can't trust DJ. Just kidding, DJ.
Who do you think was right there, Jim?
Anybody but Skip Bayless.
Yeah. No, that's right.
Yeah. Dave, I respect everything you just said. I'm going to go ahead and say Skip is wrong.
Well, yeah, I guess I would say, okay, if sight unseen, I just think it's refreshing, like I said. I think it's refreshing that he's at least considering.
When you go to the field, you match him with Tyler Lockett, who is one of the top three, maybe three, four slot receivers in the game, the young DJ Metcalf. You got David Moore and Greg Olsen. Those five, four guys with AB, you slide in there. AB is kind of like everything's there. There's the cake. We got those four guys. That's the cake. The icing is on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm getting ready to go put it on the table, and I think to myself, how can I make this cute and make everybody want to eat it?
Mm.
You go to the pantry or your cabinet. You come out with those little sprinkles all the kids like, and the kids go crazy. That's what AB's going to be for the Seattle Seahawks in that offense. He's that sprinkle that everybody goes, wow, man, that thing really looks good now.
Nah, no thanks. Keep those sprinkles off of my cake. And it's
he's
DK
terrible,
Metcalf.
Man.
It's DK, Keyshawn, not DJ.
Keyshawn Johnson, man, he's terrible.
Didn't he call him Brad Olson? Also?
I don't know if he did that, but he just said you got Olson and DJ Metcalf. Yeah,
he took a tired cliche there, the icing on the cake, and then made it a worse cliche with sprinkles. Or something.
I don't need sprinkles.
Plus, it's a stupid idea anyway, bringing Antonio Brown in, but whatever.
That kind of reminds me of the Bill Romanowski thing. Remember where he goes, you got to go hunt a boar. You don't go to Safeway. You're already safe. I'm like, what? Remember? Do you remember that rant with Bill Romanowski?
He's had so many, man.
Need a bunch of keep
boar
track.
Killers. You don't go to Safeway. You're already safe.
Romo. Unique guy.
Sprinkles.
Sprinkles. AB is the sprinkles on the cake. All right. Coming up, it's time for our player spotlight. We're going to sit down with a member of this offensive line who's been fantastic this season, Jamarco Jones. Sort of a jack of all trades on that line. He can play anywhere. He's going to join us next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.